Okay, we'll start. Tonight is one of the coolest lojongs I've ever seen, okay? I mean, it's hard to say one lojong is better than another. It's probably a mistake to say that. But this one is really, really cool. So, first we'll do the name. Say Tsunja Kolo. Tsunja Kolo. Sometimes they call it Tsunche Kolo. Okay, sometimes they call it Tsunja Kolo. And I'll spell it for you. Tsuncha means a weapon of any kind. Okay, like atomic bombs are tsunchas, knives are tsunchas, guns are tsunchas. It often means a bladed weapon of some kind. And korlo means a wheel. In the past, this text has been translated, the name has been translated as the wheel of sharp weapons. I like the wheel of knives. Okay, and I'll explain to you why later on. The first time I ever met the Tsunja Kolo, the idea of a Tsunja Kolo was in a sutra in the Vinaya. And it was in a text about karma and its consequences. And I had a student who I knew was disrespecting their parents. And I knew that this particular, it's like a Jataka tale, talked about disrespecting your parents. So they asked me to help them translate something. So I chose this text and I didn't tell them. And this was like 20 years ago. And this is in the Vinaya, a story about a Tsunja Kolo. So I thought you'd like to hear what a Tsunja Kolo looks like. Because sometimes you hear about this lojong and you study this lojong, but you don't really get a feeling for what a wheel of knives would look like. So I thought you'd like to hear the story first. And I'm also stalling while they put the bulb in the thing. So I really like it. So the story is, by the way, this is probably a past life of the Buddha or some holy being, telling about the days when they were mischievous, okay? And this young man lives on the seaside in a town near the sea. And this is back 500 BC. And his father works on a ship, on a sailing ship, and his father's always going off on trips, and his mother's always getting nervous. And then one day, the father goes away and doesn't come home, and he dies at sea. So the son is always asking his mother if he could, you know, go to sea, because all his friends get to go to sea, and his mother's like nervous he's going to die, and she says, no, you can't. So he goes to her once, he's like 18, and he says, can I go to sea? And she says, no. And so he really wants to go, but he respects her wishes, and he tells his friends, you guys can go, I have to stay. My mother wants me to stay, you know. And then, second time, like a year later, another group of his friends are going on a journey, and he goes and asks his mother, can I go with them, you know. And she says, no, no, please stay, you know. And he's like really angry, but he says, okay, I'll stay, I won't go. And then, of course, a year later, now his last friends are going on a voyage, and he asks his mother, can I go with them? And she says, no, please don't. And he's like very upset, and he's like, he decides not to listen to her. And on the way out of the door, she tries to block the door, and he accidentally hits her on the head. And then he goes to sea. He runs down the ocean to the ocean, and he gets on the ship, and he goes to sea. So they're floating around the world, and the boat gets shipwrecked on this desert isle. And he's the only person who survives. And he crawls up on the shore, and he's there, and there's nothing there. There's just forest and these weird forests and everything, this dark forest. And he's wandering around in the forest, and he's dying of thirst. And then he just drops. He's like unconscious. And then he wakes up, and he looks up, and there are these four beautiful damsels in silk, you know, and beautiful hair and jewels, and they're like looking down at him, and they say, come to our castle, you know, and they pick him up, and they lead him to their castle, and he lives in bliss for years, you know. And then one day he's out walking around, and he gets lost in the woods again, and he's wandering around, and he's looking everywhere, and finally runs out of food and water, and then he goes unconscious again. He falls unconscious again. And then the same thing happens. He wakes up, and here's like six damsels, you know, looking down at him, and we'll take you home, you know. And he says, oh, great, you know. And they pick him up, and they lead him into this castle, and he lives a life of luxury for years. And then again, he's out in the forest. He gets lost. And he's just about to die of thirst and hunger, and he comes to this fort, like this huge moat and a huge gate. And he comes to the gate, and the gate, you know, how it goes in the movies, you know, and it opens, and there's nobody there. And it's all dark and evil and bats flying around. And he goes in, and then the door slammed behind him. And he's like shaking, you know. And then he looks up on this parapet, and he hears this door open. And this is all in the sutra. It's in the Tibetan Kangya. And the door opens, and this guy steps out. And he's got a wheel. It's like a regular wheel, but there's no rim around the wheel. And then all the spokes are knives, like a whole array of knives around the spokes. And they're sharpened on both sides, you know. And it's like twirling like a helicopter blade. And it's chopping at his head as they talk. You know, he's standing there and this thing is chopping at his head and cutting, slicing his head open. And he's like obviously in horrible pain, and he's standing at the top of the stairs, and he starts walking down the stairs, you know, and the guy says, you know, what's going on, you know, and he says, oh, it's a horrible story, you don't want to hear it, you know, and he says, no, tell me, I need to know, you know, what's, how did this thing come to be above your head, what's going on, you know, and he says, it's a horrible story, I was a young man, I lived by the sea, I lived with my mother, my father went to sea, he died. My friends came, tried to talk me into going to sea. I wanted to go. I asked my mother, can I go? She said, no. I listened to her the first time. And then I listened to her the second time. And the third time she asked me to stay. I rushed out the door and she tried to block me and I hit her by accident on the head. And I ran down to the sea and I got into a ship and we went to this desert island and we got shipwrecked and I crawled up on the... And then I went unconscious, and then I met all these damsels, and they took me to their castle, and then it happened again, I met these other damsels. The guy's starting to shake, you know. And he says, well, what's going on with your head, you know? And he says, listen, this is the karma that happened to me, you know. Because I listened to her the first time, I met this first group of beautiful damsels, you know. And because I listened to her the second time, I met the second group of damsels. And then the third time I didn't listen. And because of that I have this thing chopping me on the head. And I came to this castle and I heard this story from another guy before. And the wheel came down off his head, down the stairs, and came onto my head. And I'd been here like that since then, you know. And the guy's like, and then he goes through this transformation and he closes his eyes and he gets ready for the wheel to come to his head, you know. And this is called a tsenja kola. And he says, I not only, you know, I know it's going to come to my head. Let it come to my head. Let it come from that other guy. You know, he gets a bodhisattva. He gets bodhicitta. At that moment, he gets bodhicitta. He says, I'll take it gladly. It's going to hurt. But I'll gladly take it from the other guy. You know, let it come. And he closes his eyes, you know. And he gets ready for the wheel to come to his head. And then he opens it up and it's all gone and he's in this beautiful castle. And, you know, and this is a real tsenja kola. Okay, this is like some kind of thing. In your homework I have, there's also a beautiful description of a tsenja kola in a secret text about Bhairava. Bhairava is also called the frightener. Sometimes called Yamantaka. In there, one of the deities has a tsenja kola in his hand. And it's described as a large wheel. And the spokes are made of knives, like razor-bladed knives. And there's no rim around the wheel. And then there's this empty hole in the middle, if you've ever used a large saw blade, circular saw blade. And it has a place in the middle where you can throw it at somebody. So it's like a ninja star or something, you know. And you can hold it in your hand and you can throw it at somebody. And this is what a tsenja kola is. So it's translated as wheel of knives, okay, that would cut your head open. Okay. And this is the idea. You have to get in the mood of a tsenja kola. Okay. Tsenja kola is something like that. You would throw it at somebody and it would circle around and it would cut them or something like that. Okay, and that this lojo is called Tsenjikolo. Okay, I'm going to put the Tibetan for you. Say Tsuncha Kolo. Tsuncha Kolo. Okay. The author of the text, the one who passed it on, is Dharmarakshita. We couldn't do this on the computer, there has to be a Dharma Rakshita. That's his name in Tibetan also. They use his Sanskrit name. He was an Indian master, Buddhist master. We don't know his date. We don't know much about him. He was a master of Abhidhamma, especially. We know that he taught some important Abhidhamma texts. He taught this text to Jojje. Say Jowo J. Jowo J. Otherwise known as. Yeah, you're right. Shingadema Majawa Lametene Mupadam. That's the vow. Okay. Otherwise known as Lord Atisha. Okay, Lord Atisha was in our lineage the great Lama from India who helped bring Buddhism to the Tibet, and then his students were the first Kadampas, okay, the first great early Gelupas of Tibet. Okay, his dates are that's a zero. Okay. I have other words for Tsenja Kolo that I thought you might like to see. You could call it a wheel of knives. The point is, you've got to get in the mood of a razor tip boomerang. Okay, I almost translated that way, and then I thought it's a little too much. Okay, but it's that. Okay, it's like the whole concept of a tsenjikolo. The whole idea is that you do something to somebody else, and then it comes back to you. You know, you get the big payback, James Brown. Okay, so it's like a boomerang. Okay, it's like you try to hurt somebody, and you set all day long. During your normal day, you are setting off boomerangs. You know, you are throwing boomerangs all day long. And then something happens to you. You know, your boss comes in for no good reason. That's important, okay? For no reason that you can see. You know, you're looking over here and trying to figure out who did that. You know, and you get mad at everybody over here. And you don't remember that it was you that threw the boomerang. The whole idea is that you've got to get in the mood of Tsenjikolo. Tsenjikolo means that, okay? You're constantly getting hit on the head. All day long, lousy stuff happening in your life. Very, very bad things happening to you. Your own body getting old. You know, relationships falling apart. Hopes being smashed. You know, friends dying, getting sick. And you're looking over here for who's throwing these sticks at you, you know? And every single one has come from you. You know, every single one is a boomerang. You know, you set them all in motion. Okay? You have thrown them, you put them all into motion, they started circling around, and then they came back and hit you on the head. And by getting angry at nobody, you're throwing a new one. And then you get angry at that, and then you throw a new one. And that's why the samsara is drawn as a circle. That's what samsara means. In Tibetan, it means a vicious circle, a vicious cycle. You get hit by your own boomerang, and by getting angry, you throw another one. And this is constant suffering. Just, you keep getting hit by forces that you set in motion yourself. And it looks like somebody else is doing it, but it's not true. Somebody else is the instrument of your suffering. Your boss, your ex-wife, you know, whatever. Someone is making you suffer. And you're blaming them. You keep blaming them. Every time you blame them, you throw another boomerang. You know, and so that's how we live. That's what samsara means. Self-perpetuating suffering. Okay? We keep it going by reacting the wrong way. And that's what sinchakola really means. Okay? Get in the mood. Okay? Get the idea of what sinchakola means, a razor tip boomerang. Okay? Or you could say, actions that backfire on us. Okay? That's the idea. You know, these are emotions, these are energies that you set in motion are just coming back to you. Every single unpleasant event in your life, even your own mind, when you're depressed, unhappy, low self-esteem, anxiety, stress, all of those are caused by your own actions in the past. Every single physical and mental suffering that you have is something that you set in motion, period. Okay, everything. You can't blame everything. All the people who bother you are giving you back the things that you did to others. They're only the instrument, you know. They're only carrying the result back to you that you set in motion. You're blaming the wrong person constantly. Okay, you're always blaming other people. They're just carrying to you the result of an action that you set into motion. Okay, blowing off your own toast. Okay. This is a story, I don't know if you heard it. There's a guy at night, you know, every night he wakes up at 3 a.m. in the morning and there's just two eyes staring at him at the end of the bed, you know, and he's like, in the moonlight it's coming through the window and he's like scared and he's this demon, you know, every once in a while the eyes shift around and he's like scared and he hides under the covers and then one night he decides he's tired of all this and he puts a shotgun next to him and he lays down and he waits, you know, and then the moonlight comes up and then those two eyes are staring at him again and he takes the shotgun and he fires at him and he blows off his own toes. These are his toenails shining in the moonlight, right? And you're constantly doing that all day long. Every time you get irritated at another person or a traffic jam or no parking spaces or at your own depression or anxiety, you're blowing off your own toes. You're setting another boomerang into motion. The whole world is like that. Your whole life is just, that's your life story. Hanging yourself, digging your own grave. Okay? We have all these expressions. The next two come from the text itself. Okay? They're at the end of the first half of the text. You're getting the first half tonight and the second half on Thursday. A blacksmith making a sword who slips and stabs himself to death with it. Like he's there making a sword and then suddenly he slips and stabs himself and kills himself. Okay? This is what we're doing. All the suffering you have is coming from yourself. Okay? The last example in the scripture is an archer who accidentally falls on his own arrow and dies. Okay? These are traps, these are things you've prepared to hurt other people, and you're hurting yourself instead. Okay? And that's the story of everything we do. There is no unpleasant mental or physical event in your life that you have not caused yourself. You set them all into motion. Okay? I want to read to you the opening verses, okay? First of all, he does his prostration to the three jewels. Then he changes his mind and he does a prostration to the Lord of Death. Lord of Death is like this terrifying tantric deity, okay? Like this, you know, it's this horrible, fanged, bloody, ugly monster called the Yamani, Lord of Death, okay? And he's almost like can't decide how he's going to write his mojo, okay? Like first he bows down to the nice, sweet three jewels, okay? Then he changes his mind and he bows down to this tantric, fierce monster, Lord of Death, okay? So he's like, And you're going to see in the Lojong why he does that. You know, first he's bowing down to some sweet, normal sutra, three jewels, and then suddenly he's changing his mind and bowing down to the Lord of Death. That's how he starts the text. Then he says, Chandug nas maja giwana mengi dumra lekpa jegyo kyang maja tso nga mingyo ki chandug juki maja tsota, which means peacocks wander in the midst of a forest of poison trees. A garden of healing herbs and plants may be something lovely, but peacocks have no love for them. They live off poison itself. This refers to a belief in Tibet that peacocks like to eat poison. Like, if they could find a nice bottle of arsenic or something, they would love to have it. And they say that peacocks have this special ability to eat. They go into the forest and they choose the poisonous plants, like poison ivy or poison mushrooms, and they only eat those. And then it gives them the sweetness of the color of their tails. You know, this is a Tibetan tradition, a Sanskrit tradition also, that the beauty of a peacock's feathers is actually created by the essence of poisons that they eat. And they can't stand nice things. You know, you give them some nice normal leaves or something, you know, mint or something like that, they can't stand it. They want some ugly, terrible, poisonous herbs to eat. You know, and this is what actually, it not only doesn't hurt them, they live off it, they crave it, they love it. And it's what gives their tails the beauty that it has. Okay? The next verse says, Pao kolo naksu jubana, degi peaki dumra degi kyan, pao dagni chapa mingyoki, dunya naksu sempa toyin. Bodhisattva warriors are just the same. A garden of comfort and pleasures may be something lovely, but the warriors have no attachment for them. They live off a forest of pain. Okay? And this is the idea that bodhisattvas should be like the peacocks. Okay? They should seek out dangerous situations, problem situations, people who are suffering, difficult situations, horrible situations. Like if you gave them a choice between going to a cafe and enjoying a latte, you know, or going to a place where all these people are dying of AIDS and helping them or something, they'd much rather go to the hospital. You know, if there's no question in their minds that they would rather be in a place that is suffering, okay, and they would like to help people. For them, that's more fun. They live off the idea of getting into difficult situations so that they can develop better practice, okay, and there's been a misunderstanding about these lines, okay? And I wanted to talk about that first. There's a misunderstanding that the lines mean that bodhisattvas like to stay in this crummy, lousy desire realm. You know that they have compassion, and so on the verge of enlightenment, on the verge of nirvana, they turn back nobly and come back to save the rest of us, okay? This is a dharma rumor. I call them dharma rumors, okay? This is not true at all. Okay. In fact, you have a bodhisattva vow. One of the secondary vows of a bodhisattva is not to think that. Okay. Those of you who are keeping your books, which means those of you who are doing tundruk, you know those vows. You've been to them many, many times. Okay. You do it. You know, every 3 weeks or so, it comes up in your book, and you're like, I don't have this problem of reaching the edge of nirvana or enlightenment and turning back or thinking that that's a good idea, okay? You actually are, one of the bodhisattva vows is not to have the wrong idea that bodhisattvas reach the edge of enlightenment and involuntarily turn back to help other people. That's not the point, okay? The best thing you can do for others, the thing you are sworn to try to do as quickly as you can, is to reach total, perfect bliss, enlightenment, paradise, yourself, quickly. Because then you can, for example, you can emanate thousands of bodies. You know, you could be on a million planets at once, helping people. So what, it doesn't make any sense that a person on the verge of that would suddenly turn back and suffer more for the sake of sentient beings. It doesn't mean that, okay? It means they seek out and they enjoy and they embrace difficult situations in their life. Okay, when they're suffering, when they get sick, they don't sit there and whine about it. They see it as an opportunity for practice. They turn disasters into wonderful opportunities to practice. Like if they got AIDS or something like that, they'd say, wonderful, you know. Now I have some real serious practice. Now I can think about death meditation in a serious way. It's not that they think getting AIDS is a good thing. They wouldn't do it purposely. But if crap comes to them, they know how to transform it into enlightened practice, you know. And that's the point. So there's a whole more question, you know. And the answer is no, they don't turn back from the edge of enlightenment. They don't go seeking terrible situations instead of getting enlightened. Okay, it's not like that. If a terrible situation happens to them, which they don't like any more than you do, they use it. Within 5 minutes, it's become this precious spiritual practice. Okay? Like they're cheating samsara out of its pleasure. You know, samsara is loading crap on them, and they're turning around every time something bad happens, they're using it to make themselves better people and to serve others with their practice. Okay? The same with mental afflictions. You know, the text says, oh, they use mental afflictions. And then people, I've had people in class say, oh, I read this text, you know, and I heard this lama say, we're supposed to get jealous, and we're supposed to get angry, and then we use it for our spiritual advancement, you know. It's not what it says at all. It says, if you happen to have a mental affliction, which is already bad karma, and going to have very bad effects on you, then immediately use it as a spiritual practice. You know, say, oh, hey, look, I got jealousy. What's the outcome of that? What am I going to get from that? If you know Tantra, what's going to happen to my Tsa and Tigle? What's going to happen to them if I get jealous? You know, what's going to happen to my body? What's going to happen to my mind? It's going to actually kill me to get jealous. If I keep this up over a matter of years or decades, it'll actually cause the aging process to increase in me. You know, this is crazy. And then you use that jealousy or that anger as an opportunity to understand your own nature and get out of it as quick as you can. It's not like you sit there and use the anger or something like that. Big mistake. Very, very bad Dharma explanation. Dharma rumor, okay? Everybody knows, Lele Jikta Natsuke, Deni Semba Dambe Che. Winston's the expert on this. What's it mean? All the worlds come from karma. And karma is anytime the mind moves or that you have a thought. Opening lines, fourth chapter, Abhidhamma Kosha. Okay? Yay. Okay. It means if you put up with another 30 seconds of anger, once you've noticed it, you are intentionally and purposely collecting intense bad karma. Okay? It doesn't matter if you never yell at anybody. It doesn't matter if you never hit anybody. The thought of anger itself is intense bad karma. It would be insane for a bodhisattva or anybody else to enjoy or to utilize their anger. That's a misteaching, okay? It's a Dharma rumor. The point is, when they find themselves getting angry, they immediately crush it by using it as an opportunity to practice, okay? They say, look, this is great, you know, Marie Placide made me angry. Thank you. Strategic alliance, right? Thank you for getting me angry. I'm grateful. You know, I would never have known that I had this weakness if you hadn't been so irritating to me, you know. Now I'm aware that I do still have anger. I thought I was over it. Thanks a lot, you know. And then you, by thinking like that, you use anger as an opportunity to advance yourself. It doesn't mean that bodhisattvas go seeking mental afflictions, bad karma, which will keep them out of paradise and help others. And it's not the point. I repeat, it's kind of fun. In Buddhism, you're supposed to have your cake and eat it too. Okay? You're supposed to get total enlightened paradise bliss as soon as possible for yourself so you can really help other people. Okay? So you can really be of service to other people. You are sworn to seek total ecstasy at the shortest time span you can. And, you know, people who grew up in the Judeo-Christian thing, they feel guilty about that. You know, it doesn't seem right that I should help others by having a good time. Seems like I should get nailed up on something or something, you know what I mean? It's not like that. That may be how you do it, okay? I'm not saying it's not. But I'm just saying, as you get closer to enlightenment, your life will be increasingly more blissful. And that's the whole point. And that's the whole goal. And don't be shy about it. Get blissed as soon as possible. And then go teach other people to do it permanently. and not to die. And that's exactly the process. Of course, the closer you get to paradise, the better things start to look. The closer you get to paradise, the better your life is going. The closer you get to paradise, the more pleasures happen to you, even if you try to run away from them. Money's coming at you. Good food's coming. Michael's there. Milkshakes are raining down on you. You can't avoid it. As you get closer, these things happen to you. They must, they should happen to you because your karma is getting purified, okay? And they will start happening to you. So the idea that bodhisattvas purposely, you know, on the edge of total ecstasy to help others come back to this crap and die on purpose or something like that is totally wrong, okay? That's not what the text means. That's the first homework question. Next one is, let me see here. The text is going to work like this, okay? Get this, it's really cool. This text divides roughly into two groups, 25 pages and 25 pages. In the first 25 pages, it's almost as if he had just bowed down to the three jewels, and he's watching bad things happen to him. And he's saying, for example, you know, he'll get a headache. The guy who wrote this text, Dhammarakshita, will get a headache. He'll get a migraine. And he'll examine the karma. He'll say, I have a migraine. My head is splitting. My back is hurting. My bones are hurting. You know, why did this happen? Where did this come from? What really made this happen? And he says, aha, a razor tip boomerang. You know, ninja star that I threw 3 years ago. You know, I did something to hurt somebody else. In this case, for example, in the case of a migraine, I broke my vows, okay? I had bodhisattva vows, I had tantric vows, I had some kind of pratimoksha vows, and I did something, and I broke them. And that's why I have a migraine. Aha! The boomerang's hitting me because I did that, I broke those vows. And the whole first half of the text is like that, it's beautiful. And the refrain goes like this. It's because the wheel of knives has turned on me again. You see what I mean? You keep, this line repeats for the first 25 pages, every single verse. Something bad happens in his life, and he says, where did this come from? And he says, oh yeah, it's coming back to me. I did this to somebody in the past. And he's got this ability to see where every single negative thing in his life is coming from. Okay? It's very important that you learn to distinguish the instrument of your suffering and the cause of your suffering. I call it the how and the why. Okay? It's very important to distinguish between the instrument that's making you suffer, which is the how, and then why you're suffering. You know, what is the real cause of the suffering? This is essential all day long. You have to be thinking like that. How did I get jealous? Well, I like this person, and this other person doesn't let me get near them, you know. They like this other person more than me. So, if I could just get rid of this other person, you see, that is the mindset. That's the worldview of ignorance, okay? That's the worldview of self-existence. That's the worldview that doesn't understand the why. It only understands the how. How is this bad event happening? How is this person not relating to me because they like this other person? It's this other person's fault. If I could just get rid of them, then the person would like me. I wouldn't have any competition. This is great. If I could, this is a how state of mind, and you can't have it as a Buddhist. You have to forget it, okay? Buddhist has to go for the why, okay? Why did this other person show up 3 weeks ago that this person likes better than me now? Why? It's not how. The how is clear. The how is that the person showed up. You get rid of them, another one will show up a week later. You know that by now. Every time you got rid of somebody at work, another one came. You know that. Every time you quit a job because you couldn't stand the new boss was that way within 6 months. You know? You know that by now. Stop living in the how and start figuring out the why. You see what I mean? Why did this person show up 3 weeks ago that this person likes better than me? You know? Duh, it's because you were jealous in the past. Would you like it to happen again? Then don't like this other person. and you will guarantee that it will come again. You see? And that's samsara. That's how samsara works. Okay? The natural reaction to every bad thing in your life is exactly the cause that makes it happen again in the future. It's this wheel of knives. You are throwing another ninja star. Every single time something bad happens to you, and you react in the normal way that every normal person reacts, you just caused it again. It's exactly the irony, the great joke of the devil, right? Is that your natural reaction is going to make it happen again. That's the great irony of our suffering. We make it happen again by reacting to our suffering that we had before. Okay? Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, he said this. He said, if you think about it, there could be two reactions. You recognize yourself getting angry. I mean, that's step number one, right? You realize you're getting angry. And then you think, I mean, you could either just deal with it there, squash it, stop it, don't be angry, you know? Just cut it off. Why is it important to go through the process of thinking, I'm angry now because I was angry in the past at somebody, and that's why I'm the kind of person who's attracted to anger? Why is it important to understand the real causes of why your mind happens to be an angry state of mind all the time? You know, why is that important? We're going to get to it, okay? We're going to get to what I call the correlations between what you did in the past and what's happening to you now. Let me say one thing about that. In this course, in the course on karma, I think it was number 3? Was it number 5? Oh, speaking of 5s, question 5 in the last homework doesn't have an answer yet, okay? As you may have noticed, okay? Sorry. I didn't explain it in class. I'll try to do it tonight or Thursday, okay? Question 5 about the Sakyapandita's view on certain metaphor, 4 metaphors. I didn't teach it to you, or else you were asleep, okay? I don't remember which. But we'll do it next time, okay? Where was I? Anyway. Where was I? Oh. When we did the karma course, Jetsam Kapa did a rough correlation of the results of karma. For example, sexual misconduct. If you engage in adultery with another person's wife or husband, there are 4 discrete karmic results of that. One is that you start to enjoy that kind of behavior and you do it more and more and you get in deeper and deeper trouble. Okay. The other is that you get born in a lower realm. Okay. You'll be born in a very suffering realm. The third one is that even if you do get born in a place like this as a human, every time you try to have a relationship with a man or a woman, you will lose them to somebody else. You know, the karma of having taken away someone else's spouse is that you can never keep your girlfriends or boyfriends, or all your relationships are always getting to this point where somebody else swipes them on you, okay? And then the fourth karmic result we call environmental result. Like, for sexual misconduct, if you live in a place which is unpleasant, which has a lot of pollution, or which is dirty, or which smells bad, this is a specific karmic result of sexual misconduct, of adultery. You see? So there are 4 specific results that come from every one of the bad deeds that you do. Okay? But Jetsam Kapa doesn't go into any more detail than that. He doesn't give you much more detail. The Tsinja Kolo does. Okay? The Tsinja Kolo gives you really, really beautiful detail. Every single bad thing you can imagine about your own mind or your own body or your world or your office, every bad thought you ever can have, every bad habit you have, every physical problem you have, is just about covered in this text. I love it. It's beautiful. So we translated the whole thing so that you could have all the correlations. Okay. Once you know the correlations, you have to do something about them. Okay. It's important to know that. That's why I'm answering your question, okay? You have to, if you know why you have a backache, if you know the only kind of karma that creates backaches, what is the how? What is the how? a certain, what do they call those bones? Vertebrae is crushing another one. You know, I lost my, what do you call that stuff? Huh? Cartilage. I have a cartilage problem. You know, and they tell you, oh, have a back operation and we'll fix the cartilage. That's the how. Don't get confused, okay? That's the how. That's the instrument or the expression of your suffering. Why did you have a backache? Why did you crush your vertebrae? Why did you pick up that thing on that day, on that stair, in that angle that hurt your back? Why you? And why not somebody else? Okay? That's because you hurt someone else. You see? So, you can't do much about the how. The whole science of medicine is pretty much, how to say, irrelevant. It's, you have to study the real reasons. And only if you cure the chronic causes will the back pain go away. If the doctors cut you open and fix your back, it's because your karma to have back pain is finished. If the doctors cut you open and screw up your back, as they did to our good friend the other day, leaving him almost dead, it's because you didn't have the karma for it to end yet. You see? How come back operations work on some people and don't work on other people? You have to go to the why. You must understand the why. Okay? And this text is beautiful for that. Okay? This not only teaches you how to avoid all your suffering in the future, you know, if you study this text well, you can design your own future. You can design your own paradise. I don't want to have a backache in my Buddha paradise. Well, how do you get rid of it? Well, you have to do this to other people. Okay? And he tells you all the correlations. But what's interesting for me is that you can reconstruct your past self. You see? You can go backwards from these things. If you have backaches, you can make a profile of how you used to be in your past life. You know, if you have headaches, you can profile it. If you feel depressed, if every time you get a job, the boss seems to be really cruel to you, you can reconstruct every single thing you did in the past. You can make a very clear picture of your past behavior. I find that very cool. And then you can deal with those comments. We'll talk about that. Okay, yeah. 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 She asked, suppose, you know, like, is it that the boss who torments you, that you did that to that specific person in your past life, and that's why that specific person happens to be doing it to you in this life? Not necessarily. Okay, the Abhidhamma Kosha, 4th chapter, says no. It says, if the conditions aren't there, then other conditions can cause it. If you were the last unenlightened person in the world, you'd drop a book on your back. You see what I mean? Or, you know, something would break on the horns in the cars in your neighborhood and you'd hear these beepers all night long. You see what I mean? Instead of hearing a boss. And that's a principle of karma. Karma expresses itself in an ultimate way if it can't express itself in a way, you know, if you're not going to meet that person directly. Other people have asked, you know, Master Shantideva almost implies that you're responsible for making them to collect the bad deed of hurting you. That's not exactly true. I mean, he's doing that for effect, okay? That's not exactly true. They are collecting a bad deed by hurting you. That's a karmic result of them doing that kind of bad deed in the past. The fact that they happen to be doing their new bad habit to you is your karmic result. Get the difference? Okay? They are irritating or angry people from their point of view, because they were irritating and angry in the past. They are irritating and angry to you because you were irritating and angry to others. The fact that you happen to meet up with this person who's experiencing himself as irritating and angry because of his past karma, because you have your own past karma, is perfect. It's not only not a problem, it's very fitting. That's perfect justice. It's perfect that there should be an irritating, stupid boss right in your vicinity the moment your karma for having him ripens. And it's very fitting and proper and justice and the way reality works that he's experiencing himself that way at that moment also. No problem. It's not only not an inconsistency, it proves the whole thing. Okay, you got to get used to that. Okay, that's a little delicate. He's in the right place at the right time and you're in the right place at the right time because karma is perfect. Okay. All right. Anyway, at some point in the text, he goes through 25 pages of, oh, now I figured it out. The reason my boss is so irritating is because the big karma wheel of fortune has spun around and come back to me. And it's because I did this same thing to somebody else. I stop. I'm stopping it now. I'm not going to do it anymore. And each verse goes like this, okay? 25 pages of verses. He goes, oh, got hit on the head. I know who really caused it. It's that I did something to somebody in the past. And then he makes a decision. Just, I'm stopping this now. I am not responding this time. I'm cutting it now. I unilaterally surrender. You know, no more response from me to these angry people. I understand where you came from. I'm putting a stop to it now. You know, and then suddenly, halfway through the text, he says, wait a goddamn minute. I know what's really happening. I'm getting all this stuff because I'm cherishing myself. And I don't understand emptiness. Now I see who's the demon here. It's my own mind. You know, and he says, I know who's doing all this to me. It's my own selfishness. It's my own inability to understand emptiness. And then he goes into this tantric thing. He goes into this Lord of Death thing. It's so beautiful. And we'll do it on Thursday, okay? I'm going to have David Sykes do it. Where is he? I got this chop knife and everything, okay? We got to practice tomorrow if you got time. Tomorrow night, okay? But he's like, he changes mood. He changes into this the guy, you know, this sweet guy who's writing this sweet lojong. And he's talking about, oh, I shouldn't have hurt that guy. It's coming back to me. Then suddenly he's like, you know, and he says, and he gets mad. He gets mad at his own ignorance. And he says, now I know who you are. And then the whole rest of the lojong is this heavy tantric thing, you know. It's him dancing the dance of death. And he turns into the Lord of Death. He's got this chop knife. And he's cutting at this. Who? His own self-cherishing. And his own inability to understand emptiness, you know. And it's really incredible. He takes the wheel of sharp knives. He takes the wheel of knives. He says, I know who we could use this on. And then the whole rest of the lojong is very powerful. Okay, really powerful. And he's dancing this death dance. And he's swearing to murder and destroy this enemy. And he recognizes his true enemy. Anyway, your homo tonight says, who is the henchman? Right? He called him the henchman. Henchman of the devil, he says. And the answer is twofold, okay? One is grasping to yourself in the sense of taking care of number one first, okay? I mean, the easy answer, the one who causes all of this suffering, the one who sets into motion this boomerang, okay? It all boils down to your habit of taking care of yourself first. Of trying to make yourself happy first before other people, okay? That in turn can only happen if you don't understand emptiness, okay? If you understood emptiness, you would never act that way, okay? So the answer is twofold, okay? Who's the guy who's going to get his skulls cut open in the second half of the lojong? It's your own habit of taking care of yourself first, and underneath that monster is another monster called not understanding emptiness, you know, ignorance, not understanding where things come from. Okay, so yeah, you must learn the karmic causes. You can't just remove your anger, just stop your anger. You can't do that. Arya Nagarjuna said clearly, you know, you must understand the emptiness behind all of these emotions. You have to study how ignorance, how misunderstanding of emptiness causes everything. Causes all your mental afflictions. Arya Nagarjuna said, it's impossible for a human being to stop mental afflictions without understanding emptiness directly. Period. Impossible. Okay, you can study, you know, sweet little mental tricks all day long about how to handle your anger, how to deal with your anger. Until the day you see emptiness directly, you cannot destroy your anger. You will always have anger. Okay, you must understand the emptiness of it. So when he gets pissed at the second half of the lojo, and he takes that, he says, I'm tired of this wheel cutting me. We're going to see how it works on something else, you know. And he's like, it's like Chainsaw Mary, or who was that guy? I don't know. And he's like, you know, and you know, now we're going to get the real one, you know. And he uses it on his own self-cherishing. And it's beautiful. It's beautiful. You know, it's like something beautiful. You know, it's like watching Jimi Hendrix smash a guitar or something. And he's like cutting out this self-cherishing. And we'll go through that. We'll go through that on Thursday. It's very, very stunning. Very beautiful. Okay, so you know who the henchman is. Next thing I thought we would go through, you're going to get, can I get the reading at the break? Yeah, Tasha, wherever you are. Can they have the reading at the break? Yeah, okay. See this big thing here? That's your quiz next time, okay? On the left are 20 different lousy things that happen to every one of us. For example, the people around me are bossy. I have trouble finding friends and keeping them. No matter what I do, my llama never seems happy. I tend to get serious headaches or back pains. I never have enough dough. Stuff like that. I get sleepy during my Dharma practice, okay? These are all like, in the course of the Wheel of Knives, in the course of this lojo, he discusses every one of these. And he tells you what you did that made it happen. You know, he discusses how you set in motion these energies that make you tired during your meditation. You know, he discusses the real causes between meeting up with bossy people, you know, never having the respect of other people. And he discusses low self-esteem, he discusses anxiety, stress, depression. And, you know, we could put like psychiatrists out of business, you know, sorry, whoever. But, you know, if you really understood why those things happen in your own mind, you can stop them. And that's the beauty of this text. So that's going to be one of your homework questions. In the 25 pages of the Wheel of Knives, you will find the answers to every one of those. You know, you have to pretty much do it yourself. I'll go through a few tonight. But you can, to me, this is like a roadmap out of samsara. I love this, you know. Every single problem that you have, and I use this constantly, all throughout the day, I'm battling my own mind. You know, all throughout the day, I'm trying to figure out why the things I don't like are still happening to me. You know what I mean? And then I read the Cinchicolo and I say, oh, I get it. And then he says, by the way, if you want to stop it, just do this. You see, every verse gives you the problem, every verse gives you what you did to cause it, and every verse gives you what to do to stop it. So it's a beautiful text. It's like a roadmap. Okay? It's like the idiot's guide to getting out of samsara. Yeah. Not metaphorical at all, no. Buddhism says that there is no unpleasant mental or physical event which you have not personally caused. No, it's not metaphorical at all. And you have to study emptiness to understand why. You have to understand emptiness. The people who have been here a while and understood emptiness, you know why you're perceiving the person as bossy. And the person sitting right next to you is in love with this person. They think this person is the most reasonable, undemanding, sweet, gentle. They're in love with this person. And you find them like the most bossy, unpleasant, unbearable person you've ever met. Why are two sane, adult, normal human beings having opposite perceptions of a single object at the same moment, in the same room? How can that be? It's the emptiness of that person. That is the emptiness of that person, okay? And that proves that their bossiness is not coming from their side. You must understand emptiness to get rid of these things, you know? They are being bossy not to the other person, they're being bossy to you. They can't be bossy and unbossy at the same time. There must be something else going on, okay? It must be coming from somebody else. It's not coming from them. You can't blame other people for anything bad that happens to you after you sat in this class tonight. I curse you with this mojo, okay? I mean, you can no longer believe again. Truly, I mean, you can pretend, okay, and you can fool yourself, but in the end, if you understand emptiness, you must come to believe that every negative event in your life, the how may be some other person, but the why is because you did something to somebody else. And if you understand how karma is stored in the mind, it makes sense. Okay, I'm not just, you know, they say Buddhists make up karma to explain the world, which is so chaotic, they're just trying to make it feel better. It's not that, it's true. It's really true. If you study psychology, Buddhist psychology, you study emptiness, you can see how these things work. You can understand that that these things are true. Okay? Did you have something? Yeah. How do you fix your old bad karma? You know? Like, okay, I understand I can read the verses, you know, hand them to me at the break. Maybe I can go home. You know, give me those verses. I'll read them. Like, I'll understand that I have pollution in my corner because I went out with Mr. Smith's wife last week or something like that. I understand that. And I'll stop doing that. But what can I do about my old past karma? You know, I happen to have a backache. I've had that backache for 15 years or something. I mean, suppose you have, okay? And doctors have treated it, and I've done the chiropractors, I've done everything, and it hasn't gone away. According to you, that's a result of some specific action that I did against another person, either in this life or in the life before. It doesn't really matter, you see? Can I do anything about it? That's a big question. That's called Carlito's question. There is the only person who got it in the last class, which was 12-year-old, who stood up and said, "Excuse me, can I get rid of that bad karma?" Okay? You know, can you do anything about the old bad karma? We're going to do that after the break. Okay? So, that means you have to come back. Okay? So, take a break. And then that's a good question. We'll talk about that question. That's what we're going to talk about next. Okay? About, I don't know if you know who Ken Rinpoche's root lama is. It was, yeah. She asked if there'll be a makeup class. Due to the Quaker House rental agreement, we can't do that here, but what we'll do is class 11, which is the review class, we'll have a class then. And then your review will be a very quick thing at the end of that, all right? So you might not get all the final exam questions as easily as usual, okay? All right? Ken Rinpoche's root lama was Chijan Rinpoche. Kyabje Chijan Rinpoche was the greatest scholar in Tibet. When this Dalai Lama was brought as a young child from eastern Tibet, and then he was assigned to be the teacher of the Dalai Lama, one of the two teachers. And they're called Yongzin. Yongzin means teacher of the Dalai Lama. And he was the teacher of the Dalai Lama. His root Lama was Pavolkar Rinpoche, who Rinpoche, as a young man, also met and studied with. Pavolkar Rinpoche wrote, I don't know, maybe 100 different commentaries, beautiful, beautiful commentaries. Liberation in our hands is just one of them, okay? And he wrote many other beautiful texts. The Vajrayogini sadhana that you do was written by Pavolkar Rinpoche. The commentary on it was written by Pavolkar Rinpoche. The retreat instructions were written by Pavolkar Rinpoche, okay? All the Tsongkhapa books we have that have been translated were written by Pavolkar Rinpoche, okay? And a great lama in our lineage. He's your great-grandfather, okay? 6 months ago in India, we heard in India that his books were available. He wrote, all his books have been collected into 12 huge volumes, and they've never been available. We could not get them. Rinpoche has never had a set. So we heard they were available to purchase, and we immediately grabbed Leon and talked him into it as usual, and we contacted the people in India. After 5 months of negotiation, it broke down, and they said they didn't have any more copies. And we were, like, really disappointed. We had an opportunity to talk to the new Pavolkar Rinpoche, number 3. his assistant, and he pledged to go to Tibet and try to find the copy, and he did. And then he brought it out to Nepal, and then we secretly got it here by overnight airmail, and it came the day before Rinpoche's birthday. And those were the books that were offered to him yesterday, Sunday. And he freaked out. I went out afterwards, and he had them all laid out around the room, and he was running from table to table reading them. And I don't know if you know, but his eye operation was a very great success, so now he can read very easily. So it was a great combination of his eyes getting fixed and being able to read his Root Lama's missing books, you know. I would like to ask each student to throw in something to help pay for it. We have two or three sponsors who have already given all the money. We don't need any more money. But I want you to get a little karma, okay? So I don't care if it's 50 cents. But try to give something. Who wants to collect that? Who's the... Tessie? Okay? Thanks. Okay, so venerable children here, okay, used to be called Tessie. If you, on your way out, okay, give her, I don't care if it's a dollar, I want you to get some of the karma, okay, we don't need it, but I want you to cop some of the, it's an incredible virtue, okay, and those were the books that were offered to Rinpoche at his birthday, okay, so try. Okay, there's a group forming to do hospice service and to make a Buddhist hospice in New York. They are scheduling it so that it'll open by the time you and I need it. So, if you'd like to look ahead, Fran Perlo, okay, raise your hand. She's organizing it. I know Al the Cheese Man is in on it, and it's a pretty serious project. So, Al's back there. So, if you're interested in it'll start with small service of dying people in their homes, and then hopefully we'll be able to build something later on, okay? I'm going to go through some of the karmic connections, okay? And I'm not going to do all of them because some of them are, you know, you can get them from the text. I just think it's kind of, it's very important to understand how karma works and how karma is planted. If you haven't taken the fifth course, you've got like a couple months off after this course finishes in about 2 weeks. So I suggest you do it by tape. But basically, the way karma works is, for example, if you yell at somebody, if you say something bad to somebody, you perceive that yelling. You are there, okay? While you're doing it, you see yourself yelling, and as you are yelling and as you are saying those words, you have this perception of yourself doing it. Your mind records it like a VCR, okay? Your mind records it perfectly. Your mind is recording all of those events, your memory and what we call bachak shaksa, the place in the mind where karmic seeds are stored, okay? These impressions or these imprints are being made on your mind at that time at the rate of 65 per second, okay? 65 images, 65 separate frames are playing in your mind, and each one is making a very, very subtle impression on your mind stream, okay? As you scream at somebody, okay? And then those impressions are what we call kechiki kechiki kinjik chepichu. They themselves are destroyed instant by instant. They are coming in and out of, it's called santani in Sanskrit. There's a row of flashes, and they are coming in and out of existence for years. Okay? They are being destroyed, and the power of the destruction of each one is perpetuating the energy. Okay? It's like the energy is being carried from moment, like a billiard ball, like a thousand billiard balls. And the first one hitting, the second one hitting, the third one hitting, the fourth one. And that's the process by which the karmic energy is maintained in the mind stream. Over hundreds of years, thousands of years, one of those impressions of you, that you planted there when you yelled at somebody, they are recorded, and from that moment on, instant by instant, they are being destroyed, and the destruction is leading to the energy of the next moment, and it's being carried on throughout time. So there's a stream, a steady stream of that potential in your own mind stream. That seed called karma, karmic seed, is being carried in your mind stream, and that's how it's carried in your mind stream. It disregards the passage of time, because every time an instant, it does destroy by instant, and the destruction of it triggers the next one. So it can go on for thousands, millions of years. The karma that you committed a million years ago and the karma that you committed yesterday, those impressions are just as fresh. They're just as powerful. In fact, the old ones are more powerful. Okay, they build up energy as time goes on. Okay, so those impressions are very powerful. They are powerful enough that when they ripen in your mind, they force you to see things. Okay? They force you to see things. Why is it that you see the boss as someone unpleasant and the person next to you sees them as something pleasant? Is it that one object can be pleasant and unpleasant at the same time from its own side? No. It's coming from you. That's proof that it's coming from you. Okay? If you and anybody you know can disagree about a rock and roll song, okay? If you and anyone you know can disagree about whether a song is good or bad, that proved emptiness already. I don't have to say anything else, okay? The song is not good from its own side. The song is not bad from its own side, except for Portishead. No, just kidding. It's not good or bad from its own side. Obviously, it's coming from you, okay? If it were good from its own side, it would be on the top of the top 10 forever. If it was bad from its own side, they would be playing it at Alt Cafe forever, okay? It's not like that, okay? It doesn't have a nature of being good or bad from its own side. Obviously, it's coming from somebody else, from you. And this is karma. Karmic impressions are ripening in your mind and forcing you. Notice I say force, okay? They are forcing you to see the world as you see it, okay? You can even be aware that this is going on. You can be aware that this boss is a creation of your own perceptions. But the word force means you ain't got no choice. And even though you can stand there and understand that this is coming from your mind, you can't stop it. And it's just as real as if it wasn't coming from your own mind. Okay? If you don't think so, I always tell people, go out and stand in front of a cab coming down 2nd Avenue. And as it crushes your legs, see it as coming from their own side, and or from your own mind, right? And see if it hurts less. It doesn't hurt less. Because it's coming from your own mind, it hurts just as much as it did before. Because it was always coming from your own mind. That's why it hurts. Get it? Okay, so when Buddhists say everything's an illusion, or it's coming from your own mind, in Buddhism that's a proof for why it's real. That's a proof for why it hurts. We're not saying it's an illusion so it doesn't hurt. We're saying it hurts because it is an illusion. How's that? Okay? It hurts because it's a projection of your own mind, and you can't stop it. Okay? You can't stop it. And that's how karma works. Having explained karma that way, we'll go into the what I call the correlations. Okay? He says, whenever I feel any kind of mental pain, it's because the wheel of knives has turned on me again. Beyond a doubt, it's the karma of, what do you think? Mental pain, like upset in your heart, you know, unsettled in your mind, hurt emotions. He says, it's the karma of upsetting other people. And from now on, I'll do donglen with other people and try to take away their own mental pain. Period. He just told you what to do. He told you how to get to Buddhist paradise. Okay? One verse, that's all. Okay? If you feel hurt in your feelings, it's because you upset other people, and you should do donglen. You should do this practice of trying to take on other people's mental pain. And it will go away. Your own mental pain will go away. It's very interesting. And it works. Okay? I've had many students try it. I had all these students with different phobias. And they did donglen. They did this practice of taking that fear away from other people by pretending, right? and it removed their phobias. You see, it's beautiful. It works. It really does work. Okay? He says, when I suffer at work because another person who has higher authority than me is always bossing me around, okay? It's because the wheel of knives has turned on me again. This is the karma of, he says, arrogance towards people who are lower than you, okay? And you don't notice it. Like, arrogance goes unnoticed by the arrogant, you know? You're not aware you're arrogant until it comes back to you. And then you get a real good lesson in arrogance by this one boss who has control over your salary and your vacations and your bonuses, and you have to smile at them and tell them how good they look today and stuff like that. Okay? Alright. From now on, instead of forcing other people to do what I want them to do, I will force my own body and life into the service of other people. And that's the fix. Okay, that's the antidote. These are beautiful. Okay? He gives you the antidote each time. Whenever an unpleasant word from another comes and reaches my ears, it's because the wheel of knives has turned on me again. The karma of mistakes I've made and different things I've said, divisive talk and such. From now on, then, the only thing that I'll talk bad about is what I say that's wrong. I like that. Okay, the only thing I'm going to talk bad about is what I say bad about other people. Okay. All right. This is like one of the most important ones, okay? Anytime a single thing strikes me as something unpleasant, it's because the wheel of knives has turned on me again. The karma of constantly seeing my world as something less than totally pure. From now on, then, I'll devote myself to seeing things only as purity. This is called Namdak, okay? Say Namdak. Namdak. Namdak is described in the Lam Rim. And it's where you try to see the silver lining in everything, okay? Every event that happens to you, every time you have a disappointment, every time something wrong happens to you, you immediately try to see it as like a godsend, you know? You try to interpret it, you know, if Winston comes and screams at me, then I try to say, okay, maybe he's a tantric angel, you know? What's he trying to teach me? Maybe I wasn't strong enough. Maybe he detected that I didn't have enough patience and he's trying to help me. Thank you, you know? And Namdak means you turn around everything to like that. You see, everybody, it's a kind of benevolent paranoia, schizophrenia? Paranoia, right? It's where you think everybody's out to help you. Okay? Seriously, that's Namdak. Everything that everyone ever does to you, good or bad, they are secretly trying to teach you something. They are enlightened beings. The whole world is full of them. They're out to get me to paradise. You know, and they're making these plots ever since I was a kid. You've got to see Truman's World, okay? You've got to see it. I should have made that the homework, okay? Oh, it's still the homework, okay? If you didn't do it, you've got to do it, okay? It's exactly like that. Life is exactly like that. And if you don't think so, that's responsible for something striking you as unpleasant. Okay? The less you're able to do that, the more unpleasant your life will be. Sunjikolo. Okay? Wheel of life. Wheel of knives. Whenever I find myself without anyone to help me, no friends of my own, it's because the wheel of knives has turned on me again. The karma of leading away those who were close to another. From now on, then, I'll never act in a way that makes others lose the ones who are close to them. Okay? So, like, if you have a problem finding friends, you have a problem making friends, you have a problem keeping friends, it's because you broke up other people's friendships. Okay? Now, what are you supposed to do about it, okay? And that's the rest you can read for yourself. You don't need me to read them for you. What are you supposed to do about it? Okay, so 2,000 years ago when I was Joe Blow in Estonia, you know, I broke up some friends, you know, and so now, according to you, you can't prove it, I can't prove it, except for what you said about karma, which is proof. But anyway, supposedly I broke up some friends in the past. So what can you do about it? I mean, in practical terms now, okay? Okay, I understand that I must have broken up somebody's friends in the past. I'm tired of losing my friends. I'm tired of meeting really nice people, and then 6 months later, they don't want to talk to me anymore. I'm tired of that. You know, okay, I believe your wheel of knives thing. I believe your boomerang theory. You know, I believe that it's because I must have broken up friendships in the past. So what am I supposed to do now? Okay? I don't want it to go on anymore. All right? Now, it's very important, okay? This is the punchline. Once you've used this text that you got tonight to identify the karmic, the real why, not the how, right? The how, you're right. It's the assholes at work. That's how you're getting hurt. But why are they there? And why did they come to work at your company, in your department, sitting next to you? You know, why? That's in here, okay? The answers are all in this text. So what are you supposed to do about it? You see what I mean? I had a person come to me, they said they had certain kinds of physical problems, you know, serious physical problems. And we figured out it was because they had engaged in some kind of naughty behavior, okay? I mean, we studied all these books, we figured out the karma, and we figured out that this is what they were doing. And they said, frankly, I've never done that kind of stuff in this lifetime. I mean, I did little stuff, but nothing serious. And so, either the book is wrong, or I must have done it in my past lifetime. But frankly, I don't have that problem right now. And this is the case in a lot of these things, you know. You will identify the karmic cause of some physical or mental problem you have. You want to get rid of it. But then you realize that you don't have this problem anymore. Okay? And that's often the case, okay? The karma lasts longer than the habit. Okay? It may be that you identify the main cause of some suffering that you have as lying. But you don't have that problem anymore. You're not a person who likes to lie. You don't lie. That was all finished a long time ago. That's old, old karma in my deep karmic pockets, you know? But I don't have that problem nowadays. So how am I supposed to fix that old karma? Okay? The trick is... And listen, okay? This is how to get rid of all your physical and mental pains. Okay? And you can do it, you know? Especially people who have some kind of serious physical problem, like a back disc or a stomach problem or some kind of diseases, okay? You can fix them. And that's the promise of Buddhism. But you, once you've figured out the karma that you did, or that you must have done, then now you, of all people in the world, have to be super careful about that kind of karma. Okay? It's not enough that you don't lie anymore. You have to be the most fastidiously truthful person in New York City. If you want to get rid of that karma, this is how you do it. And it works. I'm teaching you the key to happiness. Change your reality. Get out of that old crummy body. Get into a new one. Okay? You don't have to go to the gym. It doesn't cost anything. Okay? Seriously. You can make your body look like anything you want. Seriously. Identify the karmic causes. But if you find out that you have a physical problem that was caused by, say, lying, and even if you're not the kind of person who ever lies, you must now become a person who can't even get near to lying. You have to be totally, perfectly truthful all the time. Okay? And that's how you do it. This is the essence of the four powers. Okay? I don't think I have the four powers thing here. Let me see. That comes on Thursday, okay? When he turns into a monster. When he turns into Dracula. Okay? Frankenstein and Dracula together, okay? And when he starts to crush and beat up and slash with his knife his own cherishing, you know, his own bad mind. He says, and I'm growing fangs. You know, he says, wah, wah. You know, he says, I got four fangs. I'm going to sink them into your flesh. He's talking to whom? His own habit of cherishing himself. His own habit of watching out for himself first. He says, I am going to take a bite out of you with these rabid fangs. These four new fangs that I've grown, you know. He's like, ah. And then he says, the four forces of confession. Okay? It's very beautiful, you know. It's the four powers of confession, you know. It's like how to remove old bad karma, you know. And the essence of it is, I will not do those things again. Okay? So it's very cool. I'm teaching you the trick to physically change your body. And if you have mental problems, depression, low self-esteem, some kind of anxiety, stress, you get confused easily, you can't figure things out that you want to, mentally your intellect is not strong as you want it to be. You can't remember Tibetan words, etc. No, seriously, it's all in here, and I'm not kidding. You can do it, okay? You have to identify the karmic cause as it is stated in this text. And then I don't want you coming to me and saying, yeah, I understand the cause is lying, but I don't happen to be a person who lies much. I don't like to lie. I've never been attracted to lying. I'm a pretty honest person. Forget it. Now you have to be perfect, okay? That's the essence of removing that karma, okay? Is to be perfect about that particular bad deed, okay? Figure out the one that causes migraines, which is, by the way, taking a holy vow like you guys did last night and breaking them, okay? Migraines are caused, according to the Lojong, by not being very careful about the vows you took from your lamas, okay? Like every single dotting every I, crossing every T, you know them backwards and forwards, you keep your book, you track them every 2 hours, you check them, and you're perfect. You won't have migraines anymore. You see, they'll go away. And frankly, it's the only way you can get cause of, the only way you can cure a migraine is that. According to Buddhism, it's the only way to stop it. Either it'll wear out on its own, which takes time, and it may not wear out for decades. You may have migraines for decades. Or treat it with the karmic medicine, you know, find out the real cause behind it and stop it. Okay. Somebody told me, no, karma doesn't cause migraines. I went to the doctor, they found out I had a peptide imbalance, you know. I have this chemical, it comes up in my brain, it's too much. If I take this pill, it goes away. I didn't have migraines for 6 months now. You're telling me how? You didn't tell me why. Prove it. Not everybody who takes those pills gets better. Period. They don't cure migraines. If medicine works, it's because the karma to have a migraine wore out. If medicine doesn't work, the karma to have a migraine didn't wear out. That's why some people take aspirin and get better, and some people take aspirin and don't get better. Don't you get it? That's why medicine doesn't work for everybody. Okay? You've got to get it. Okay? Medicine is the how, it's not the why. You have to remove the real reason behind migraines is not respecting the promises you made to your when you took commitments or promises to your lamas, okay, like that. So now you've got to be Mr. Clean, you know. Now you have to be, if you don't like migraines, you know people who have migraines who keep their vows pretty well. It's not good enough for them. They have to keep them perfect, okay. Then the migraines go away, okay, like that, yeah. So should you just stop taking aspirin since that's not the real cause? No, you still need the house, okay? I mean, the house are still useful. What I'm saying is, frankly, if you do the karmic fix well, you don't need those things. Eventually, you won't need those things. You won't need medical treatments, okay? If you follow these lojong very, very well, your body would actually change into a different kind of body. You would not be capable of feeling pain. Okay? That's what becoming a Buddha means. You see? You keep this stuff so well that your body actually, physically, really changes into a different kind of body. And that is the goal of our classes. That is the goal of our practice. That's what we're doing here. That's what your goal is. You must pull it off before you die. And that's second level tantric practice. Okay? But you must do this for that to work. That cannot work without this. You see? And if you do this stuff well, the minute you start trying those tantric practices, your body will start to change. You know? It's amazing. And that's enlightenment. That's paradise. That's an angel's body. And you can do it, but you have to start now, okay? It's all here. It's very, very cool. Everything is there, you know, and it works. And you must pull it off before you die. You can't wait. Don't wait till the last year or so. It doesn't work. When you're sick, you can't think about this stuff. You know, when you're in the hospital, this stuff will seem crazy to you. When you don't feel well, you can't practice Dharma. Okay, you got to do it now while you're still halfway healthy, okay? Yeah. Oh, he said, following that train of thought, why would this holy being, Ken Rinpoche, need an eye operation? Why is His Holiness the Dalai Lama getting wrinkles and getting bald? Okay, why? Okay, this is a very important question, okay? And don't forget the answer. Don't ever forget the answer, okay? If you had good service of your Lama, if you personally served Ken Rinpoche or your Lama, whoever it is, well, you would never have to see them get old. Okay? If you see them getting old, it's just like the guy who sees the boss being mean. He swears the boss is mean from his own side. Don't believe it. The boss is mean because your mind is making you see it that way. And when you see one of these holy beings have a cataract operation or try to get down the stairs and can hardly make it, that's not Ken Rinpoche's problem, that's your problem. Okay? If you see His Holiness the Dalai Lama getting old, you know, if you are going to live to see a day when the Dalai Lama is not walking this planet, you better straighten out your karma. That's your fault. He's not, who knows what he's seeing? You see what I mean? Just because you see the boss as mean, do you believe that everyone in the world sees the boss as mean? It is exactly the same principle. It's exactly the same principle. Don't think His Holiness the Dalai Lama gets up and looks in the mirror and sees what you see. Okay? He don't. Okay? Boy, he sees something else. You know? And the closer you get to that, the closer you will see. You know, suddenly they'll say, today we discovered a cure for baldness, and we gave some to His Holiness, and you know, suddenly you'll hear that crime dropped again, 23% in New York City. Okay, where do you think it came from? Who do you think is causing that? Is it Giuliani? You know, I'm not kidding. I'm really not kidding. It is an environmental karmic result of your good deeds. You have respected life more than you did in the past. And an environmental result is occurring now. And it will continue to get better if you work hard and keep your vows. Keep your book 6 times a day. Stop. Check your vows. Seriously, check your vows. Check the details of what you just did for the last 2 hours. And you will change New York City. And you can credit Giuliani, the how. But if you want to know the why, any person who's living in New York City when the crime drops has personally contributed to that event through worshiping the lives of other people, making them healthy, protecting other people's lives. Okay? That's where everything comes from. Next time you giggle in class, I know how many people have wrong worldview. Okay? That's wrong worldview. Of course it came from that. Where did you think from? From its own side? That's not emptiness. Okay? We'll stop there. That's a great place to stop. Okay? That's how you get to heaven, basically. Now you just have to do it. Next week we become the Lord of Death, and we start growing fangs and slicing this guy up with his own wheel. All right? Salam Shri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu.